again, it's the Blueprint, Canada's conservative podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Schmail, member of parliament from Halliburton for the Lakes Brock. Thank you very much for joining us today. And I tell you, we have so much to talk about. It's a packed agenda. So we need you to help us get this message out. Pushback against the ever-moving liberal agenda. Like, comment, subscribe, share this program. If you can't watch it now on platforms like Facebook, please download it. Listen to it later on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, you name it, it is out there. And for all of those paying attention to politics, the hardcore, well, the fiscal update was released yesterday, and boy, oh boy, there is a lot of spending involved, some of it good, some of it bad, and someone here to help us unpack all of it is the Natural Resources Shadow Minister. We have Greg McLean, the Member of Parliament from Calgary Centre. Thank you very much for joining us. We have so much to talk about.
Thanks for having me, Jamie. Much appreciated.
Not a problem. Now let's get right into it because time is short and topics are long. Here we go. We have a massive spending plan. We're pushing almost $400 billion in federal deficit spending this year. We're pushing probably over $1 trillion in Canada's national debt. And all the while, the government in its document is almost steering the economy, picking winners and losers. First, we don't know all of their plans, but in their words, they're almost going to steer us in a direction that they pick winners and losers based on what they determined is innovation.
Correct. You know, it's about picking winners and losers in this budget. You take a look at the throne speech, the task force for the new recovery was iterated in spades in that document. It's doubled down here again. So we look at the choices this government's going to have to make going forward, and they're spending a lot of money in the midst of a pandemic on issues that have nothing to do with the pandemic or the economy. It's all about a business shift. Now, does that business shift make sense? And there's a lot of people that say, what is the result of all this investment in parts of the economy that we have no idea what the economic or environmental outcome will be at the end of the day? It is highly questionable.
And all this language saying the greener and more inclusive economy, well, how does that greener or inclusive when the government is deciding what is green and inclusive? They're not letting the market decide. So if you have one company that is producing a product that is better than what is the government believes to be better, they have to work twice as hard to overcome all of that in order to get their product on the market at a place they can sell it and hopefully get it to, you know, widespread distribution.
Exactly the case. I mean, this government has shown time and again, and we're dealing with something now called the Clean Fuel Standard, where it's moving towards expensive outcomes that do not accomplish the same ends as more economical outcomes for our country. At the end of the day, you have to realize that Canada has been and will continue to be a resource producing nation. We've got great forestry here. We've got great mines. We've got great oil and gas production. We've got great hydro production, uranium production, minerals, the works. For us to turn our back in this point in time vis-a-vis where we sit in the world takes away all our advantages as far as where we add value to environmental remediation in the world.
So Canada's unemployment rate, according to the latest figures, is 8.9%. It's the second worst in the G7, right behind Italy, and almost double the UK in the unemployment rate. And this is despite almost record amounts of spending by this government. Now, according to the Canadian Federation of Independent Business, I'm going to pull up these stats here, 37% of small businesses in Canada are losing money every day they are open. 23% of Canadian small businesses will run out of the cash in the next 3 months. And 56% of small businesses have been seriously impacted by the second wave of the pandemic. And when we talk about the recovery, how about the anchors of our economy, the natural resources sector, the oil and gas, the mining, the ones like, you know, you had these pillars to build on, and they're a major part of our economy that is hurting in addition to all these small businesses. So what's our path forward?
Well, our path forward has to be constructed on both a national basis and an international basis. So you think about our exports in this country, the things that the world pays us for, we've got to make sure that those survive intact and whole through this process. And our resource exports are incredibly important to our balance of payments around the world. Without our resource exports, we are so negative as far as the money that comes into this country versus the money that goes out, that it would put us in a poverty situation on a trade basis like no other country in the world. We need our resources to continue to funnel the world because they're world-class resources in many respects. I can speak to the oil and gas resources, the most environmentally produced oil and gas in the world, the highest social standards. When we leave the field, I can guarantee it'll be taken up by somebody else that produces these resources on a much less environmentally friendly basis and with much less social guidance than we have here in Canada. That's important because a private sector economy, and don't recognize that only 20% of the oil in the world is produced in private sector responsible organizations. The other 80% is produced by state-owned enterprises and the like. And those aren't at all responsive to investors, protesters, those sorts of things that, of course, we have to take account of here in Canada and respect their input as well. So we're accomplishing a lot. As a result, we have a very environmentally friendly output, and we need to make sure that that continues to advance.
Well, one thing the government seems to fail to address is that even if you shut down the oil and gas sector in Canada, which we hope never happens, we want that to be a major strong anchor in our economy. And this is someone from Ontario saying this. So there are lots of people in Ontario and other parts of the country that support Alberta, Saskatchewan, the West in terms of their oil and gas industry. But it doesn't actually get rid of the demand piece of the puzzle. And so you're not actually solving that problem. You can try to steer the economy. You can try to subsidize and put endless government money into, your pet project of the day. But at the end of the day, if it's not widely available at a reasonable price to the majority of Canadians, you'll never get that off the ground. And the project is doomed because once the government money stops, the project ends or significantly takes a drop.
That's right. And, you know, that leads us right into one of the big issues on our table right now, which is pipelines. Pipelines has been the issue for 4 years now about how we actually get Canadian resources to export markets. And with the election of a new administration in the United States, we know very well that we're trying to make sure that the United States makes the most environmentally salient decision here in getting the pipelines built that need to be built to get the product to the end market. And that end market, the most viable point for it is down in the Gulf Coast, the Texas Gulf Coast, where the refineries are that use heavy oil. A lot of what we produce in Canada is heavy oil. And the big market for that is down in Texas. So we've got to make sure that that market is still being filled with Canadian heavy oil, which is much more environmentally friendly than the replacements that would come in by ship to fill any void that would emerge. So getting our oil to those markets is number one. And we've also run into some issues around, as you know, Enbridge Line 5, where there looks like there's that attempt by the governor of Michigan to try and interrupt the flow of oil, which flows from Western Canada through the Straits of Mackinac and supplies not only Ontario and Quebec with 500,000 barrels of oil a day for their products, their propane, how they drive their cars, how they heat their homes. But it also supplies three states in the United States with some of their production as well. So we've got a great long-term trade agreement with the United States that hinges upon energy. And that free flow of energy of all sorts across the border has built on our, has allowed us to build a great quality of life in North America. And we need to make sure that we continue to advance with the United States stronger environmental standards on all our energy exports and all our energy imports, because they do go hand in hand.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, there are still tankers from foreign countries coming into Canada, specifically on our East Coast, with oil from some of those nations, state-owned companies that are producing it in very, very horrible standards in terms of environmental and labor in many cases.
Very correct. The two refineries, three in particular, but two provinces, St. John, New Brunswick has the largest refinery in Canada, and that is completely beholden to foreign oil, except for sometimes Newfoundland offshore oil, although most of that goes across the ocean towards European markets. So a lot of most of what comes into St. John, New Brunswick is foreign oil. Much of what comes into the Quebec City refinery, Valero, is also foreign oil downstream as well. So there's a shipping trade that happens in oil and oil products up the St. Lawrence. But as I say, the biggest refinery in Canada is in St. John, New Brunswick. Years ago, there was an attempt to get what's called Energy East, a pipeline all the way that would serve both the Quebec City refinery and the St. John, New Brunswick refinery with Canadian oil. And that, in this last government's term, was kiboshed. The actual company withdrew from it because of the extra emission costing that was put on it by the federal government, which required both upstream and downstream emission costing. So even when people were burning it in their cars, it had to be accounted for by the oil production company and the pipeline, which was the first time that type of standard had ever been used, and it hasn't been used since.
And just to clarify for some of our listeners and viewers who aren't overly familiar with the oil and gas sector or the mining economy, it's not just those jobs that you see on site. It's the offsite, the spin-off jobs as well. And those are mostly owned by small business owners. And because of the pandemic, so there was problems in the oil and gas sector, largely brought on by the Trudeau Liberals and their anti-energy policies, such as Bill C-69, the No More Pipelines Bill, the tanker ban, which basically didn't ban foreign tankers from coming into our ports, just ones leaving with Alberta Energy. But also the fact that when you mash on to what people are going through, the small business owners in COVID, the Canadian Federation of Independent Business says 46% of small business owners are worried about the survival of their business. That's almost half of small business owners in Canada are worried about their future and whether or not they will be able to keep going in the next 6 months to a year.
Yeah, and it's troubling because you take a look at all the inputs that our natural resource sector gives towards Canadian manufacturers, but you also take a look at the inputs that the Canadian manufacturers give towards the resource industry. It is a good flow back and forth, and it leads to a great diversification of our economy. If we don't have a robust Canadian natural resource sector, we will be importing a lot of the goods that our manufacturers need, which will make them less competitive because they have to go further afield to get their inputs. But also they do supply some of the inputs to the oil and gas industry as well. It is a good hand-in-glove relationship across Canada. And I know we always talk about Alberta oil. In fact, what we export is Canadian oil. You think about where the oil comes from in Canada. A lot of it comes from Alberta. A lot of it comes from Saskatchewan. Some comes from northern British Columbia, and some comes from southwest Manitoba. And Newfoundland and Labrador is a great producer of light oil products. So we've got to make sure that we understand this is a Canadian industry that we've done very well at all across Canada. And we need to get that export to world markets. Sitting on it just in Canada is going to be too small a market where we actually don't have an ability to influence the environmental outcomes of the world as opposed to just one country.
A lot of businesses are concerned about what you mentioned earlier, and we need to touch on this before we let you run here. It's a clean fuel standard. I think we almost need to do a show on that just wholly. What is it, and why is it particularly, potentially very dangerous to our industry? Not just oil and gas, I think throughout the supply chain. And will dramatically increase the cost of living on pretty much everything.
Thanks for the question, Jamie. It is very important. Again, it's not legislation. It's regulation that's been embedded. It's effectively a second carbon tax. But this one is very, very, very opaque. It's implemented at the manufacturing level in so many different ways. A lot of the manufacturers I've spoken to say they haven't figured out exactly how it's going to affect them. They just know it's going to affect them badly. And a lot of the Environment and Climate Change Canada's regulations on this that they've seen, and I'm not sure if they're the final product at the end of the day, but they've gleaned a lot of concern from all industries across Canada, not just the oil and gas industry, but the mining industry, the forestry industry, the manufacturing industry, the food processing industry, the agriculture industry. They're all going, this is a regulatory overreach that's going to cost us a lot of money. And if you're productive in Canada and you're suddenly being assessed another big tax on your production, the only thing you can really do is pass it on to your consumers. That does one of a few things. The first thing it does is it actually increases costs for consumers. And there's been a number of studies that show how much that's going to cost Canadians going forward, some say up to $1,300 per year for increases in the cost of our food and increases in the cost of our energy and our transportation. But the other thing it does is it actually puts a line of sight where a lot of manufacturers go, this is too opaque in Canada. We need to move any of our new investment decisions south of the border. And remember that south of the border, we have a trade relationship where we flow goods and services back freely, particularly with the United States, but also with Mexico. And if you're somebody saying, I either expand my plant in Canada and keep my jobs there, or I expand my plant to the United States and those jobs end up there, at the end of the day, Canadians are still consuming the product from those plants. Mind you, there's going to be a big cost built in there for anything built in Canada. And is there going to be a border carbon adjustment tax at the end of the day? That has yet to be seen. So this is being designed by people that have no concept of how businesses actually make decisions. Again, it's about picking winners and losers without all the information in their hands. And I know every industry has tried to convince them of this. And right now, it doesn't seem like the government is listening.
And that is extremely dangerous, because when the government makes these type of promises, and you even see the NDP talking about taxing the wealthy and all the luxury taxes that they're talking about, it's only providing new revenue streams to the government, but it's never as much as they always think. They never ever take into account the massive change in behavior that you see as a result of this. People aren't going to be sticking around to get bled to death. Businesses aren't going to continue to shrink their ability to do what they do best, which is innovate, create the next product or service people want to buy. It's not going to happen. They're going to leave or try to increase the price to cover that increase in taxes. And at some point, the product that you are advertising, the service that you are offering, is not going to be affordable to the vast majority of customers. So like you said, you'll have to make the decision. Do you stay or do you leave and hopefully are able to lower your price in another jurisdiction doing the majority of your business so that people are able to afford it in the jurisdiction that's being taxed so heavily?
Exactly the case. And if you want to talk about individuals, I mean, there's that talking point that the new Democratic Party has about taxing the rich because they've profited during this pandemic. Well, let me correct that notion. Number one, the one thing that the rich people of Canada have done, and they have made money during this pandemic, but it's not cash money. They've just sat on their portfolios that have been inflated because of the amount of money that's been thrown at the markets through the Bank of Canada's quantitative easing, which we don't want to get too deeply into because it's a topic all its own, as you know. But that has inflated the price of financial assets. So anybody that had financial assets beforehand, those are worth more. So yes, their net worth has gone up. They haven't done anything, and not like a bunch of cash has landed in their pockets, as I say. They've just sat on their assets and suddenly they've been inflated by the government. Well, thank you very much, government. Now you think that any of these people that have this kind of wealth are just going to say, oh, great, thanks for inflating all my goods, and now you can take a bunch of it back. One thing that you've always found in the world is that there is an open door in every country in the world, including Canada, for people that want to move here, move their businesses here, and move their wealth here. And suddenly to say, look, because the government inflated your assets, Canadians, we're gonna tax you more heavily than everybody else, is an invitation for those people to look for different doors. And I am not going to encourage that. I'm encouraging all the people that know how to build this economy back better to help us build it, because we have a great economy here in Canada. We just need to get through two things, a pandemic and a bad government.
I agree with you 100%. The other way too, just to build on what you're saying, think about if those products or services weren't available and the government told us to lock down, stay home, stay safe. People would not be able to get, in many cases, a lot of the items that they were able to get because there were other options available. Now, it came at a cost. I'm not disputing that, or I think it's very serious that a lot of small businesses are hurting behind it because of this. But these businesses were there to provide a service, and people were able to get what they needed to continue on.
It's correct. You take a look at the choices that are being made right now. How do you justify the fact that large box retailers can stay open and small businessmen, who are the backbone of our economy, are sort of saying, you're the problem here, we have to shut down? You know, a lot of people are questioning that logic, and I get it. We do need to kind of take some serious precautions here about the infection that's rampant in our society. But to pick winners and losers again here is really, really not the government's role, because it actually isn't doing a good job of it. We actually need to make sure we're making better decisions, having better health outcomes. And, you know, I like to give the government credit whenever I can, when I see something going well. And one thing I saw yesterday in the fiscal update was the fact that they're allocating $1 billion towards long-term care facilities. Thank goodness, but it's 9 months late. If you didn't see this was the front line where people were dying, you know, significantly because of this pandemic, this is where you needed to be in March and April. Thank you for finally getting there in November. It's a little late, but I'm glad you finally made your mind up to get there. So those are the types of things I think we need to look at in this pandemic, is how are we being most affected by this, and how do we mitigate those that are most affected by what's happening with this pandemic? And I've seen it in spades. I know my mother-in-law is in lockdown at her seniors facility, and her mental health is deteriorating by the week. The loneliness that comes with being locked down when you're 90 years old is intense. And I hope that we can see her again sometime soon, because this is something we have to address. How have we continued to allow this pandemic to be rampant in our senior facilities? Address it, find the protocols, apply them across the country, and make it better.
We have question period coming up, Greg, so I only have one. I'd like to ask you a few more questions on that, but we have only a couple more minutes, and I don't want to cut off our leader, because it should be an interesting question period. $400 billion in an estimated budget deficit this fiscal year on the federal side. Where is it coming from?
Well, right now it's coming from the Bank of Canada. So you take a look at the way they're financing this overspending of government at this point in time. You say $400 billion deficit, that's more than the revenue they usually take in the federal government in a year. So it is troubling, quite frankly, why they're this much over budget. Lack of targeted approach to how we actually come out of this pandemic economically. But it is a bit of a deck shuffle, if you will. The government issues bonds to the market, but the only people buying in the market at this point in time is the government and the government entities like the Bank of Canada, who basically puts it on their balance sheet. So we're issuing we're issuing bonds to take cash, and the people buying those bonds are, of course, the same people in the end that are selling those bonds. We often call it the Enronization of national finances, because everybody's cross-guaranteeing the very nature of the basis of the security at the end of the day. We owe this money to ourselves. What we've lost here is any sort of mark to market about what that debt is worth. So effectively, the low interest rate is manufactured now by the Bank of Canada. In effect, nobody is buying Canadian bonds because they're too cheap, given how risky our country has become in this pandemic.
I have so many more questions. Greg, I got to cut you off because question period's coming up. The leader is getting ready to go. So I appreciate the opportunity. Greg McLean, Member of Parliament for Calgary Centre. He's also the Shadow Minister for Natural Resources. Appreciate it. Good friend of the show. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you for having me, Jamie.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, new content every single Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Please tell your friends about us. Please like, comment, subscribe, share this program. Again, if you don't have time to watch it all right this second, please download it, listen to it on platforms like CastBox, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, you name it. We're out there. Together, we can push back against the ever-moving Liberal agenda. Again, don't forget, next Tuesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time, brand new content with a brand new guest, lots more questions, because we're giving you a point of view not always told by the mainstream media. And of course, remember, low taxes, less government, more freedom.